Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Good afternoon, good morning, good evening, wherever you are in the world. I'm Russell Tovey.
And I'm Robert Diamant.
And this is Talk Art.
Welcome to Talk Art.
How are you today, Rob?
Today, Russell, I am feeling primal.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I'm not talking about Primal Fear.
Primal Scream?
Nope, I'm not talking about anything like that. I'm not talking about, well, actually, I'm a bit talking about primal instincts. And I'm definitely talking about primal urges.
Okay.
You know, the kind of like things that we try and align in ourselves, kind of whether it be like our personality, like we have different parts of ourselves. And I think today's guest explores this perfectly and seamlessly throughout their work. And you know, even things like sexiness and kind of like romanticism and kind of the way that we interact with other people in everyday life, but also in relationships and that kind of courtship and what do they call it, like foreplay, I guess, kind of like all those kind of things before, you know, I'm not just talking about sexual acts, I'm talking about the kind of the complex human nature and the way that we all have these like almost primal urges in a way. And today's guest has said the most beautiful thing recently, which is the figures in my paintings are like ghosts, translucent beings, not solid humans. They are possibilities, not conclusions. They are forever in transition, but not in a hurry to become someone. And I've just been resonating with that, kind of like gestating that idea. I think it's such a beautiful idea of kind of transformation and how within the self we can be so many different things, and why should we limit ourselves to just one idea or one sort of sense of who we are. It's really expansive and actually liberating. So we are very proud to welcome to Talk Art
Lee Hay-D.
That's very musical. Hi.
Hi.
How are you doing today?
Nice to meet you guys.
You too.
It's good. It's good. I just finished painting last night and then now I can relax and it's good.
Yeah. Amazing.
You finished painting a whole body of work or finished painting one painting?
I finished painting a body of work. That's for my show that's opening next week in London. Yeah.
This is at Pippi Holdsworth Gallery.
Yes.
And this is titled, this is your first solo gallery, solo exhibition with the gallery, and this is titled 700 Nights of Winter.
Yes.
Is there 700 paintings you've just finished?
No, but it felt like 700 paintings. But yeah.
How many paintings are in this body of work?
There are 7 to 8 like really big works, and there's some like works on paper. Yeah.
Oh, how long have you been working on this exhibition, and why this title?
Well, I worked on it since like last fall, and yeah, and they just kind of, I paint like so many paintings at once. I paint like, yeah, I've been painting at least 4 paintings at the same time. So they can dry as I paint other ones. Yeah, and so I don't get bored. So yeah, and then the title 700 Nights of Winter, because painting in winter in London felt like madness because it was so like dark all the time, and I'm quite like nocturnal, is that how you say it? Like I work at night and I wake up so early. I wake up so late. I sleep at like 4 a.m. and I wake up at 12. And then when I wake up, I go to the studio, it's like 3 p.m. and it's already dark. Mm. And I have just been like living in this like internal darkness for the whole winter. And I think that played into the painting and that became part of the theme of the painting.
Whoa.
And yeah.
When you said then that you do many paintings at once so you don't get bored, is boredom a place that you find paralyzing, or is boredom actually something that drives you to create more?
I think boredom is something that drives me. I think I started painting when I was younger because I was so bored. I had to study a lot, and I was so busy but so bored at the same time. So this was my like outlet.
Mm. So drawing, I've read then, so drawing, you had quite upbringing where education was forced on you and studying was something that you were, you know, locked into, you felt like you were trapped by, but whereas drawing was a way of escaping for you and something that you felt made you feel free.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's how I started, like ever since I was like really young. Yeah, because I think mostly in China, like kids like spend a lot of time studying, and my region, my province, were like super competitive because there are not enough like good schools, and you have to enter a lot of exams, and it's super strict. And my mom's a physics teacher in high school, so like it's like the teacher's kid. And
oh, you went to the same school your mom taught.
No, I didn't, but it's like, you know how teachers, they always like be so competitive with the children. It's like, oh, your mom is a teacher and you're bad at school. So it was like so much pressure. Yeah, so I loved drawing, and it was like my secret. I started drawing, it's kind of like my secret. I would like pretend doing homework, and I put like a paper underneath, and I would start draw, and I would draw like the most like mad stuff.
Like what?
Like I was a little draw like things that are just like unconsciously sexual, like people like hugging naked, or like a really buff man with like six packs or something. And then it's just like super like naked. But yeah, and they felt like that was my, yeah, that was like my own fun every day.
Yeah. And you felt like you had to hide these. Did you feel that they were, did you feel like ashamed of them, or did you feel like nobody was allowed to see them? They were a real secret for you.
I think they were provocative, but I thought they were funny. Like I didn't want my family to see them, but I would show my friends. Yeah, and I would like draw like comics, and then like make everyone read it and make everyone like write comments below the comics. Like, yeah, and I had to like find like things that were interesting for me, because I wasn't really allowed to watch that much TV, and I wasn't allowed to use like computer. Yeah,
it's incredibly imaginative then, like this kind of world that you opened up for yourself through you know, drawing and everything. So you grew up in Shenyang in China, and can you speak a bit about what it was like growing up there? Did you get like much inspiration from like local artists, or were there artists that, you know, were kind of renowned, or museums or galleries or things like that?
I think I like growing up, I never heard of like galleries. It's just, where I'm from is like, it's very industrial, and it was it's very cold. Shenyang, it's like negative like 30 Celsius in winter, and then yeah, and then like people are really like outgoing, like really like kind of, but can be very aggressive at times. It's kind of like Russian, like in a way, like where I'm from. So because it's kind of close to the north part, like close to Russia in the north part of China. Mm. So not many. I didn't know any artists growing up, and I didn't think that was a possibility. But I think growing up there, seeing the colors in the interiors, in the countryside, where everything is super bright and vibrant, and then like like high contrast, big, big green, big red, big yellow, and then like a whole like the setting in the village is like is, I mean I don't live in the village but my grandparents did, and then I lived with them for a bit, and they slept on brick beds, that like the beds are made of brick and the whole family sleep on it. Like there were like 10 people in the family, they all sleep on the same like long brick bed, and the brick bed would have this cover that's super floral, like has so much color, and on the wall like people put everything on the wall, like everything from like packaging, like they'd be like seeing this like really colorful like candy wrap, and they would like cut it out and put it on the wall, and it's like such like a tradition. And then you see this celebrity's face on this packaging and you cut it out and put it on the wall. And then the whole wall is like super colorful. And I think that like that intensity of color and that like aesthetic of not leaving anything blank, like really impacted my work.
Is that, yeah. And that aesthetic, does that go across many families or is this just your family?
No, it's a tradition. It's like mostly everywhere, like in the region, yeah.
Wow. So how did you find art then? Because you've had a wild career, like from 2022 to now. When I first heard about you, you had a show at Linseed Projects in Shanghai. And we're in 2024 now, and your career has just gone stratospheric, and you must have a lot of attention. How did you get to that point, and how are you now navigating that?
I think I had like a breakthrough during COVID. Before then I went to art schools, and I tried to combine all these things. I tried to combine what I saw in my childhood, and later I moved to the States, I moved to the UK. I tried to like combine everything that I felt inside and who I am, like all together. I wanted to find a perfect way that to depict all the things I want to say. But I felt I painted mostly figurative before. And then during COVID time, I realized like, oh, I don't have to follow the traditional rules the academia of like painting taught me. I don't have to like, oh, you have to have three elements at least in your painting, and you should paint the figure this way. You should start with like iron oxide like paint, and then you, like I gave up on those, and then I felt like okay, like now I can do whatever I want, and I just went with it. So I had a month that I had a small studio in Brixton with no windows, and I would just sit there throughout the night, and I would just make like small paintings. Like I would make like 10 small paintings a day. So that kind of like, one day I just felt like, okay, I think I'm slowly getting there. I think I know what I'm trying to say. Yeah.
Do you feel like you start, like you were saying, you started with the figures then when you were developing your practice. Do you start with the figure in your abstraction now? And also your work, for people discovering your work now, if they don't know your work already, would you describe yourself as an abstract artist?
I feel like, I don't think I'm that abstract, especially the new body of work. There definitely has have a lot more figurative elements in them. So I feel like I like, and I'm used to being in between of things. So I feel like my painting are in between of like abstract and figurative. And then I like how it's, for some people they are purely abstract, because like, I think more before that people couldn't find the figures in my work. And then they see, oh, like it's a big, colorful, abstract painting. And that's good. That's good to me. Like it's okay if that's what you see. Yeah.
Your friends can sometimes see sexual imagery in your work because they know you really well. So, yeah. You know, we might see it and see these abstracts kind of amorphous anemones. I see a lot of jellyfish underwater, it feels like. But your friends will see these sexual images in there because they know you very well. And also in the past, you have actually sneaked sexual imagery in there because you knew your parents would be looking at the paintings and you felt this desire, but you also felt like they couldn't see them.
Yeah, that's true. I think I want to train people, like when they see enough of my work, they have like a specific way of seeing that I see. And like the other day, I had a painting that's like, it's blue and there's like a little yellow part on the left side, which I thought is obviously a window. And then like it have a little cross of the window frame too. And I thought like, oh, that's obviously a window. And then my friend came to look at my work. And then like, I was explaining it. I was like, oh, this is like, you know, there is a yellow window. And then here is like what happens in a very dark room. And she was like, I would never think about that as a window. I was like, what do you mean? That's obviously a window. And then like, she like spent like 20 minutes to convince me that you should make it more like a window. You should make like a little curtain or like make the window frame a bit more like obvious. And then I'm like, no. And she's like, it's gonna make so much sense for like so many people if you did that. And I'm like, what do you mean it makes perfect sense now? And I thought that was so funny because like I had to like convince her, but I love it when my friends do that.
There's also a brilliant story where you once painted a giant butt plug and your mum said to you, what a nice waterfall.
Yeah.
did you ever tell her that it was actually a butt plug, or you let her believe that it was a waterfall?
No, I don't think my mum knows butt plug exists. No, I want people like who are innocent, like stay in their innocent ways. I'm not trying to change anyone, you know. It's like I'm trying to be like inclusive, like in my work. Yeah.
What I really respond to is this. I love all the subversive idea, this kind of like the hidden, you know, depths of the work, which actually it's interesting thinking about those early collage walls, because in a way there's a collage element to the way the paintings look somehow. I know it's in paint, but they do sort of feel like many different parts all coming together. But I'm really into it psychologically. Like, I love that kind of repressed self, you know, like I growing up in the 80s knowing I was gay, and I think Russ as well, I think we both struggled with being gay basically because the world was so homophobic and still is. But you know, we obviously had to adapt, and kind of you do things to survive, and you repress little parts of yourself all the time, and you change the way you act to the outside world. And I love that about these works, because I feel like they're visual representations of that, almost this kind of like, you know, the balance of your conservative childhood with your kind of almost like punk self, because I feel like you've got this real rebel soul, which I just love. And I feel that in the work. Can you speak a bit about that kind of tension?
Yeah, like I feel like my work is definitely about this kind of like repression. And then when I was in college in Maryland Institute College of Art, and then I had the tutor ask me like, why don't you just paint like queer people having sex like in obvious like big giant ways and just be provocative and be loud? Because back then I was like painting like a scenery of a still life, and then there were like tiny little people having sex in the back, but you wouldn't see it unless you look really careful for it. Because I feel like that's not the representation of my life and then my queerness, like growing up in China, and then like I feel like growing up in China, I didn't even know that like they are. Like I know there are gay people. I thought that was like one in like a million people. You know, I was like, there must not be me. So I didn't have any information. So it just like, it felt like this like queer energy that's inside of your body that's about to explode in some way. But you just don't know what that is. You just feel like, okay, I'm really weird. I feel like I'm not the same as other people. And this kind of like displacement is what I want to paint in my work. And it's not just for like queer people. It's for anyone like, and I think everyone shares this like feeling of displacement and this like just like humanly raw loneliness that's in us that having a hard time to connect with the world. Yeah, and I want to depict that. I want to depict that like not in a way that's like so grand and provocative, but it has like a story, like a plot that you have to work your way into it to find it. Because if it's so loud, then it would be too direct and too easy that people don't appreciate. Like it's like how queer people like come, like become themselves, become more like themselves. It's a journey itself, and I want to showcase that journey. Yeah.
Wow. Well, you've described the work as being a struggle between queerness and a responsibility as a Chinese child of a very conservative family.
Yeah.
So that tension that Rob was talking about. And I didn't realise, but China places restriction on nudity in art. So that must have been something that you really had to consider when you were making these, when you wanted to make these works as well.
Yeah, when I did the Solo with Lindsay project in Shanghai, I think I started to hide like figures in my work because of that, because I think it's really funny. Because before that I made a painting of a really shiny butt that was sitting on like a little mat. And then like the gallery saw it and she's like, oh, you know, you can't show that in China. And I'm like, okay, I'm gonna play with this idea. Cause even if like you paint people in bikinis that get canceled, like you can't show that. And then, so I just like, I'm gonna trick all of them. I'm gonna make like, hide like people having sex in this painting. And I wanted to be approved and I wanted to be seen. And I think because of those restrictions, like it made so many things that's possible. And I always played with like restrictions. Yeah.
And the title of this show was Tits at Dawn. So I take it the imagery, you have to hide it. But when it comes to the text, you could be pretty out there with it.
Well, in English, it's called Tits at Dawn. But like tits still also means a kind of bird in English. And then the Chinese translation is like
course.
The bird at dawn.
Of course, so it is. Like, I mean, that's my way. My brain just went straight to, you know, breasts. But actually, you're right. They could be tits as a type
I
of bird.
I love this idea of like overcoming censorship. It's so interesting. That kind of
quite,
limits.
Did it feel quite dangerous? Yeah. Did it feel like you were taking a risk? Like if you made that work and you put it out there and it's been exhibited, if somebody found out that was part of this kind of censoring of art, that you were doing that, would you have got in trouble for that?
I don't think so. I don't think I'm not that big. No one, like, I don't think they would go that far. They would just take the work down in the worst case, you know. And also, if you look up like Google translation or something, tits at dawn, it's birds at dawn. It's like, what do you mean? I didn't know. It's not my first language. I didn't know tits means breasts.
So clever.
I think they also though they check at customs the actual imagery, so sometimes they open up the crates. I heard this the other week because I weirdly visited an artist, a painter, in the same studios that you were in, or you are in Brixton, and they were saying that they have to be really careful because they actually look at all the imagery and they check it, and then if it's seen as too risque, they just seize it and they keep it in like a vault or something, or destroy it, I guess.
Oh yeah, like I heard from my friend that they have a huge like group chat of like hundreds of people who just looking for things that's wrong with the painting.
Wow.
And they will like put the images in that everyone like try to search. Yeah, but I think that's madness.
Something I've really found interesting about your way into art, you were saying about how you had this really conservative education where you had to study a lot, but also you worked out earlier on, or I don't know if you did earlier on actually, but you worked out at some point that you were dyslexic. But through dyslexia, art became even more important to you, or even more needed as a device of communication.
I mean, like, well, I studied the whole like I studied through all university, and then I found out I was dyslexia.
Right, right.
And then I think it all made sense. And then I always felt a bit like difficult with reading, and then I always felt I don't know enough as other people. So I feel like this kind of inferiority made me want to know more. So I spent a lot of time listening to audiobooks as I paint. Yeah, I listen a lot.
Rather than reading.
Yeah, rather than reading. Because also I can't find time to read because like I have to paint, and like it's so time consuming. I feel like it's a luxury to read these days, definitely.
And you choose an audiobook over music in the studio?
Yes. I think on a sad day, I listen to music. Yeah.
On a sad day. But books, audiobook going, Rob, what you want?
I was going to say, what kind of music?
What kind of music? It goes through so many different things. I have this album full of music in Spanish, like Rosalia, kind of like Spanish pop. And then
Malamente,
like,
I love her.
Yeah, and then also like Chinese music from when I was younger, like really, yeah, like TV show like music and stuff like that. Yeah, all
would
kinds
you,
of stuff.
Would you say that you know, the audiobooks, books and film are more inspirational to you for your art than other art, for example?
I think so, especially like in the beginning, yes, definitely it started from the stories. I was very inspired by Haruki Murakami. Yeah, I think it's the surrealness, it's the magical realism that I was really interested in. And I was like, I really struggled with like the difference between magical realism and science fiction. I wanted my work to look like magical realism, but not science fiction.
Mm. I don't know. What is magical realism then for people listening, and how could you make your work look like magical realism over science fiction?
I think to some people my work looks like science fiction, but like to me it doesn't. I feel like magical realism is like Haruki Murakami, it's like Gabriel Marcus, it's like this mundane life and there's a little glitch in the life, and then but like you still believe this is reality, but science fiction is like you're taken out of this planet, you're taken out of this reality, and then the everything, all the rules of this world does not apply. Yeah, I think I still want to not fit in, but like work with the rules we have in this world, but somehow alter it. And there's this like example, it's like there's a Haruki Murakami book example, is that sometimes you put macaroni cheese in the microwave and you get ramen noodle. And some people be like, oh, I must have put ramen noodle in. Like, there's no way like macaroni cheese can turn into ramen noodle. But some people would like just strongly believe, okay, there must be a glitch happening in the world. Something has shifted. I put in macaroni cheese, now I get ramen noodle. But I accept it. Like, there is some magic in life. So that's exactly the feeling like that I'm trying to get with my painting.
So you're like, in the camp of put macaroni cheese in the microwave and you get ramen noodle, and that's totally cool.
Like, it's cool. Like, I believe something shifted in the world. Not that I just put like ramen noodle in the first place. Yeah.
But that's almost spiritual in a weird way. Like, that's almost like believing in other dimensions or other worlds. Like, there's a few artists I know that really believe in, I don't know, seances, all kinds of things. But like, you know, I don't know. I know it doesn't sound like it's the same, but in a way it feels to me like it could be.
Yeah, it is spiritual, but it's also the possibility of spirituality, not like full spirituality. It's like this idea of like, you leave possibility for everything. Like on the painting, oh, there could be a figure. This could be a mushroom. This could be something on the painting, but it could not be. And it's okay either way.
Does these audiobooks, do they in some way affect the way or the process of your painting? Is there like do you end up following a narrative of a book, say, in the way that you create?
Yes, definitely, but it's always delayed. It feels like now I'm painting things that remind me of audiobooks I listened to like years ago. And I think I'm slowly digesting everything I've been consuming. And then like, I think like 2 years later, I wanted to paint like a transparent dress that's hanging in a dark room. And then I struggled, I tried and I failed. And somehow like a couple weeks ago, and it just came out. It's just like emerged from the canvas out of nowhere. And I was like, finally. Yeah, and then that happens. It's like you have to let the canvas talk, let the canvas like emerge from water. Yeah.
Oh my Whoa, god, it's so cool.
That's so cool.
Is this going to be in the new show, this painting?
Yeah.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
So can you talk about, when I've been researching, there's been many, many books, many very surreal books that have come up, but one that I feel like made me suddenly see your work differently because of the way you spoke about its influence on you is a book by Mo Yan titled Big Breasts and Wide Hips. And when you read this book, there was a certain element in that book that then now in your paintings, it makes you think of that book the whole time.
Yes, so Mo Yan's work is also very surreal. His big breast, wide hips is like reminds me of 100 Years of Solitude in a bit, but like Chinese. And then, like it talks about like it's such like a dense book, but it's about like a family, the Chinese woman from beginning of 20th century, and then she has so many children. And one of her youngest son, she had her only son out of 9 children that was like addicted to breast milk. And then he couldn't eat anything but breast milk. And then in the end of the book, and then there was a part that the mother finally passed away, and then he was like 50 years old, and he was like crawling, like crying on the grass field. And then he saw all these dots in the sky. And then like there was this like passage or just saying like all the dots, they were like, they're kind of like nipples. And then like they have this like ring of light, and they're like breasts, and all these like breasts, like they come together, become a one giant breast, and then they exploded. And I just thought like, that's so mad. Because I think, and then now I just like, after that, I cannot see every dot so innocently. And I feel like every dot could be a nipple. And then, because I have like a stigmatism or something, and then every time I see light, I see a ring around it, and I see like this like I feel like I see so differently, and then all the light points they like shifts and morphs. So I think that played a big part into my work. And now like sometimes I decide like where to paint a figure in my work. I make a lot of dots on my painting, and I choose like 2 dots. I'm like, okay, here are where the breasts are, and then there's gonna be a figure here.
No way.
So all the points of light in your paintings are potentially are nipples.
Yeah.
Love.
Yeah.
Isn't astigmatism where you, if you have a white wall, you see like dots, almost like floaters or something. Is that what they call it in your eye or something?
I have that.
I think a lot of people
Yeah, I think a lot of people do. It's like if you close your eyes, like I made this like big painting that's red and they have like a lot of dots recently, and then and I told people this is what I see after I close my eyes, is what I see behind my eyelids, and I can see like the bloodstream floating. And then everyone's like, what do you mean? It's nothing when I close my eyes. And I was like, I close my eyes and I see all these like shifting lights that just like swimming and then like across each other, and then like things are morphing, and sometimes at night I can't sleep because I close my eyes, I still see all these lights. And then so that's what I painted, and I thought everyone felt this way, and then apparently some people don't.
Yeah, it's because you're the glitch.
You're the macaroni cheese ramen noodles.
Yeah.
Isn't that brilliant though, that actually the work is so personal then, because this is your personal authentic experience that you have being in your body, and then you're able to draw on what you're seeing when your eyes are closed and making that into work. Is what an incredible gift, I guess, that you have then, and actually an opportunity, a privilege to be able to change that into art.
Yeah, I think it's a need. I feel like I want to connect with people this way. Like, and I thought all these personal experiences are universal. So that's why I wanted to like paint them. And sometimes they're not, it's very shocking. Yeah.
Is it a relief then when you finish a painting? Because it sounds like it's quite exhausting, you know, like even just all those colors you see if you close your eyes. like, so when you sort of get it out and you create the work and then it's done, is it like, ah?
Yeah, it's definitely a relief. I feel like it's a relief for everyone when they finish work. Yeah, but there's also this feeling like, oh, if you give me 2 more months, this will be like, and like another level. And then, but sometimes it's good to stay at a state of the painting. It is still like a complete painting. But I always know.
So they never feel completely finished, the paintings, to you? You feel like you have deadlines and they leave, but you could actually work on these paintings?
I could potentially, because I'm growing. There are paintings I made before that I think of, oh, I could have done that. Like, I look at the image, I was like, I could have do something more. And then sometimes I'm like, oh, like maybe someday I can like bring a paintbrush to like the collector's house and I'll add this. Maybe they will make it perfect. And I think paintings are ongoing process. Like, they are like people, but they just stopped at the stage because, not because it's completed, because like it has to stop.
Wow. How often are you in the studio?
When I'm working on a show, I'm here like 6 days a week. Yeah. And the way it was super intense, yeah.
And do you still have the tradition where you have to put fish slippers on before you start painting?
No, I got rid of my fish slippers. They got broken because I wore them so much.
What were they made out of? Because they're really crazy looking. They were really like, they looked like fish.
They're just like plastic, like slipper material.
Yeah.
And what would you used to do? Get in your studio, take your shoes off, put the fish slippers on, then you could start painting.
Yeah, before it was like that. Now I got new shoes. I got like really warm winter shoes that looks like a puffer jacket.
Oh, it's not another animal you're putting your feet into.
No.
A curious ritual.
Will you give yourself a time to sort of pause and reflect now that your works, this body of work is going to leave your studio? Do you leave work behind and sit and mediate, like meditate on it, or are you straight on to like other ideas?
What do you mean? Like, I continue working after I finish a body of work?
Yeah, do you give yourself a pause to reflect on that body of work, or are you straight into the next body of work? And
I mean, when I had no choice, I would go straight in. But if I have choice, I'm gonna take a long break for a bit, because I feel like it's needed to get away from painting. Yeah.
And you've in the past also made sculptures, so out of air dry clay and different materials. Can you speak a bit about how important that was for you in your development as an artist?
I like making 3D objects. I like making sculptures. I think if I didn't have to paint, I would be like making woodwork all the time. Mm. I really like carving, and I like things that are 3D. I think like when I was in Chelsea College of Art, I was really ashamed, not ashamed, but like I felt like I shouldn't show my paintings. I should make a sculpture. I should do a performance, because I felt like everyone felt like, why are you still painting? It's such a traditional medium, like there's no point, painting is dead. And then I felt like, okay, I'm so uncool if I'm painting. And then so I made a lot of sculptures, and then I did performance, and I liked them. Like I liked doing them, and I felt much more proud of them than paintings. Yeah, and I think it's the materiality, but I have a hard time now to like make sense of my sculptures with the paintings. Like, they seem like they don't really go together. Like, they seem like they're diving into very different directions. So yeah, so that's like what I'm trying to work on. But I'm also like experimenting. I have a sculpture that I was making throughout the years, like on 3D models, like 3D rendering, and I'm trying to get it produced like in some way. I had it carved in wood, a small, like, small piece. Well, I wish I could show you right now. You
have to sense
it. I really loved your sculptures, The Pillar of the Motherland. And yeah. In a way, I feel like it'll make more sense in time, if you know what I mean. Like, like I think if you give yourself 50 more years, then when you've made more of both of them, I bet you it'll all just make total sense in a way.
Yeah, I'm waiting. I'm waiting for it to make sense because, like, those sculptures, they are very, like, they're very heavy and they're very, like, realistic in a way. Like, they're in different language with my painting. And I'm trying to find a language that can include both of them. Yeah.
Do you feel like your performances then sort of work in alignment with the painting, especially a performance, The Willow Tree, which you did, which actually was a painting performance? You yourself and three other performers had funnels, self-made funnels on your head that were filled with paint, and you would sort of flick paint around and it would become this abstracted work. That feels like it. The language of that is more with the language of your daily practice in the studio.
Yes, I think that is my biggest attempt to link the two. And I think my performance throughout time was about painting. Like, even when I didn't know that, I think now I know it in a richer perspective. And then I think for that one, I wanted to paint in a way that I don't have to use brushes, but I also want to mimic the way how liquid transform, like, go past our body. And then it is kind of like, and these liquid, they're kind of like feelings that's inside of you. It's like the feelings that passes through your veins and then like materialize onto the canvas. And I want to show that process of how things just, like, poured out of me. Like, maybe not like in one go, but like they're dripping little by little, and that's how my paintings are made. Yeah.
And do the colors that you choose, your palette, because there's a lot of green and a lot of red especially, are they coded? Do colors mean specific things to you emotionally, or are there messages behind them, or is it literally, you know, just what you're sort of instinctively feeling in the moment?
I think in, like, a lot of it, it's like a lot, the colors come from different things. A lot of them in the beginning of my work, they came from movies, but now it came from like a feeling. It's like I had this like big urge to make a big red painting because I think I felt red those days. It's like the theme of my like this week or something, and that it become like that. It felt primal, like this feeling. Yeah.
And with abstraction, can you see the finished painting in your mind's eye, or with abstraction are you always reaching or never knowing what the end is going to be? Is it more of a surprise?
It's all surprise. I think it's all surprise. It's like, and I'm not that precious with my work. It feels like they go through so many different stages. They never look like how I intended to in the beginning. It's like I wanted to paint the tree and then it became like 500 hot dogs, as an example. You know, it's like, and I must learn things like throughout the way. I felt like these learnings, these accidents, they are what make the painting. And then I'm like, and I really want to be funny sometimes. So I see like, okay, here is like this shape right here. I think it looks like a penis. Okay, I'll paint it into a penis. Like, so it just happened that way. Yeah.
Do you know, you were saying that like there was a kind of resistance to painting and the painting was dead. Do you think that's led to you having to feel like the paintings you make are creating something new, you know, to add to the canon of the history of painting? Like, is that a pressure for you?
I think it's because back then I painting is a language. I didn't know how to use this language to convey what I had to say. And I felt like everything I was saying is a bit tainted by what people taught me. And then once I reached like, okay, I think I'm saying like 80% of what I want to say. And then it's the most true I can be. then I realized that, like, it doesn't matter if this language is this or that. It is just a transportation. So yeah.
Is it a surprise to find yourself in London? You grew up in China, you moved to the States when you was 15. Did you always imagine that you'd end up here? Or is it just like a series of negotiations as you went along?
Yeah, it is a surprise that I'm in London. I think when I was younger, in China, I never thought I would go abroad. And then I went to the States, I never thought, okay, I already settled there, I know how to do things here, I know how to go to a bank here, like, I don't want to move again, and then I'm in London. Yeah, and maybe I'll move someday too. I felt like I was pushed into this adventure.
Mm.
Yeah.
I thought it was really sweet though, because I heard that your painting teacher, David Reed Ma, was at the RCA in the 60s. So now, yeah. Like, you've been at the RCA yourself now. I was wondering if that had somehow, in a kind of, romantic way, like, because I know that teacher meant a lot to you in terms of, like, you know, supporting you and believing in you.
Yeah, I think I had a lot of great teacher, and David is definitely, like, one of the most respectful one. He I started painting in oil because of him, and then he told me about RCA, and I felt like I definitely like worshipped him. So I felt like I wanted to go to RCA, and that was like my goal. Yeah, and then he went to RCA in the 60s when it was free. Wow. And then he would just, I think he ran away from home, and he was just painting somewhere, and there's two people like saw him and be like, oh, do you want to go to the RCA? And then he went to the RCA. And I just thought it was crazy. Yeah.
And where was he teaching you? In America?
Yeah, I went to... So I went to the States when I was 15 and did 1 year of student exchange in Ohio. And then I went to California to go to like a art boarding school. And then he was teaching painting there. And then so I like learned most things from him. Yeah.
Oh, I love the idea of an art boarding school. I'd like to go to that. That'd be incredible. Do you, so you're going to have your first solo with Pippi Holsworth Gallery. What is it like having a gallery like that that you work with? Because they have an incredible roster, and the space they have is beautiful on Hedden Street, which is just off Regent Street, if anyone knowing, in the West End of London. What's it like to have the support of a gallery like that?
Like, it's super convenient. They're super fun to work with. Like, I can send a message whenever I want, and then, like, I feel like everyone in the gallery like can like I have like a little like connection with them. Like, it's very interesting, like, to send them just like random picture of my day, or like, oh, this is my new painting, do you think it suck, like stuff like that. Yeah, I think they're super supportive. Yeah,
great.
I know you did a show last year in Los Angeles with Michael Cohen Gallery as well. What was it like showing in LA? Did you go out there for it?
Yeah, I went out there for it because I loved LA. Because I went to high school in California, and I went to LA a lot. And then, yeah, I spent my summers in Los Angeles, and I felt like that was the city that I knew most before I came to London, and that I always wanted to show there. I had this like special connection with like Santa Monica, with all these places. Yeah.
It sounds like you have a big deal.
It sounds like, yeah, you have a lot of ambitions and you're fulfilling them. What are the remaining ambitions that you have? Are there places where you're dreaming of showing, or certain countries that you'd love to visit and have work in?
I think I definitely want to show in New York and in Paris. Like, yeah, I feel like that would be really good places to show at before I turn like 30. Like, that's like my little ambition.
How old are you now? Can I ask?
26.
Okay, good.
Whoa, you're so young. Wow. And so talented. That, and you're insane.
You're in great like institutions, have collected, yeah, your work. Are there other museums that you would love to be a part of?
Definitely want to be in Tate. And yeah, I think like Tate, Palais de Tokyo, or in France, and then, yeah.
Oh, well, you saw a show at Palais de Tokyo, which really you loved, of Miriam Khan. I remember that was last year, and it was quite a controversial show, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was quite controversial. I was so moved in it. Like, I felt like it was like one of the shows that I really felt like deeply connected. Like, yeah, definitely.
In what ways?
Because her work, like, despite the controversy and everything, like, it's like looking at the work itself, like, they speak to people in a way that's like, it's like haunting you. It's like the nightmares you have, and it's the nightmares you have that you can't get over them because they're so fascinating. And it's like they're like seductive ghosts that like just like harness their soul.
The materiality of it, though, I can see a sort of connection with the way that Miriam Khan uses like a fade of in and out and focus in and out of her subjects. And I feel like with your painting, there's a lot of like fade, and then you focus on sections, and you're being drawn in and out. What is the process of painting for you? Is that multiple layers? And what is the paint that you use?
I mean, I use oil paint, and it is multiple layers. It is like... I use a lot of glaze medium, oil, and then I think what I like about Miriam Khan's work is that they're simple and they're confident, and then it feels like they're effortless, but you know that she must have put so much work in them, but she just chose the best ones. That's what I think, but maybe she can just like make them like super effortlessly as they seemed. But I think a lot of times in painting, that paintings look effortless, but they are not painted effortlessly. So what I want is to have that confidence, to feel the big land of canvas in one color, and it still makes sense, and it still be enough. I think that's what I'm jealous of, yeah. Yeah, definitely.
What is the brand of paint you use? Is there certain companies that you rely on, or brushes, or?
I use my favorite brush is like Da Vinci flat brush. They're like super good for blending, and I use just like the most like artists use, like Michael Harding, and then Winsor Newton, then Old Holland, Williamsburg, and M. Graham is also a really good brand that I like. Yeah,
I know you were talking a lot about this idea of like you and your body, and like and the very immediate like reality of your psychological or emotional state, say, you know, when making work. But also I noticed this kind of undercurrent, a theme of domesticity and kind of the structures of homes. And even, you know, in some of the sculptures you made, I think you turned one of the sculptures into a stop motion animation film. And it had this kind of character who almost was like Sandra Oh out of Killing Eve. This kind of like this female figure, which you said looks like Sandra Oh yourself. But can you speak a bit about making a film as well? And also this idea of the house or domesticity as a kind of undercurrent?
I think I liked houses, I liked architecture because they are like bodies. They're functional, and they have tubes going through, like, and it has to be kept in a certain temperature, and then there's water going through, there's gas going through. And I wanted to use this analogy of a house to represent the body, and then the house is a body, and then we are the body that inside of this big bodies, and the houses that are comfortable and safe are like mimicking like the motherly womb in a way. And then I felt like I made that stop motion because I was trapped in the house every day because of COVID. I made that during COVID, and so that is. And then also domestic space, they are where these glitches happen. I feel like it's the mundane life that produces all these glitches, and there are quite a few like glitches in the stop motion. She had a dream, and then like she had dreamed there was like this hand that's like touching her, and the middle finger broke off. And then in the middle of the night, she had to poop. And she pooped, and then she like threw the poop outside, like in the village. And there's like a little middle finger in the poop. So it's like I don't know. I think it's very subtle, but it's very crazy. And there are people watching the film. They're like, I didn't see that if you didn't tell me that. Like it would be so much nicer. It would make so much sense if you made it more obvious. And then my that friend told me to paint the window.
And it's the like, same friend that's going, you need to make everything, yeah.
No, I mean, like, this...
Yeah. Go on, sorry.
But I think a lot of people tell me this, but I think she's just most direct. She was like, this is the biggest problem in your work that you need to resolve. I think it's funny.
Have your family seen your paintings, and what do they think about your career? Like, are they aware of your success, and like, are they proud of the art you make?
I don't know. I think they know that I make money, that they're happy. I don't think they understand like how big the success is. I don't know how big the success is a lot of time, and think they're just happy that I can feed myself. But my aunt looked me up to see my paintings last time I went back to China, and then she was like, she really liked them.
Oh.
And then I was so happy. And because I when I was really little, I lived with my aunt for a bit, and then like she was like she taught me like some crafts when I was really little, and taught me how to clean, like, and I felt like it meant a lot to me. And she was a very artsy in my family too. She made like embroideries and stuff. So that was like the highlight. Yeah.
Do you get nervous before an exhibition?
Yeah, I think I do. I think I get more nervous when I feel like I can't finish the work. But then after that dies down, like I get nervous before the exhibition mostly because of the socializing I had to do. Yeah.
Right, so you get an anxiety around having to talk to people.
Yeah, I feel like in a bigger group, I feel like for us this is intimate and it's perfect for me. But if it was a lot more people, in a crowded room, I feel like I panic a little, definitely, yeah.
How do you title your works, and where does that come from? Because I feel like there's a poetry within a lot of your titles.
Yeah, I read poems, and then I find lines in them. It's kind of like stealing. Sometimes I feel bad about it, and I ask my gallerist, is this like bad, and they're like, it's okay,
it's a reference, and also you're recontextualizing it, you're kind of putting those words into a new context in a way.
You're right. And my favorite poet that I stole from are Hera Lindsey Bird. Had this poem by her, and I think Tits from Down was like a phrase from it.
Mm.
I found that from it, and I thought, tits I don't, tits I don't, that sounds nice.
Sounds lovely.
Yeah, and then I found, what else did I steal? I stole from George Bataille a lot. And then I find a lot of his poems are very cruel, but very like morbid. And morbidness can be very sexy too sometimes. And then, yeah, and I was like this close to name my exhibition in LA called Her Breasts Open Like a Coffin, and they're like, no. and everyone I asked, they're like, no. And then I give up.
I think that's a brilliant
title. I really like that title.
Yeah, well, so really? 700 Nights of Winter opens how long? So the paintings are getting picked up and then they'll be exhibited. I think it's next week, isn't it? What date does it open?
It officially opens on the 15th of March.
Okay. And it runs for how long?
And runs for how long? I think a month or so.
Okay, great.
They need to check the days.
Yeah. And when the paintings go, will your studio be completely cleared out, or do you like to have work hanging around still?
There are some small works I'm still working on that's in the studio, but I think I'm gonna I'm gonna do archery in my studio.
Archery?
Yeah, I'm gonna buy a target and put it on the wall, and I have this bow and arrow, and then I'm gonna like turn it into like an archery ring for myself. Yeah, and then my girlfriend is also buying a pole for pole dancing to put in my studio.
Well, the party's in your place then. This sounds like
archery and pole raucous. Dancing. That's another show.
Yeah, so that's what I'm gonna do in the next month. Yeah.
What are the smaller works like, and the works on paper?
I think they're more funny. They're like, they're funny. I think they're like, some of them they're quiet and they're melancholy in a way. And I do a lot of smaller works of the torso. Mm-hmm. I have this like ongoing series of the torso, and because I feel like the nipples are kind of like eyes and the belly button is like a mouth, and it's like doing portrait of people's faces, but it's like portraits of these torsos. And so like they are like torsos, but they're also kind of like landscapes. And yeah, and I did a few, and now I'm trying to do more. Yeah.
So the works on paper feel very different to the paintings.
Yeah, they're like the mini sections of the painting. They're like, yeah, they're like the small parts of a big machine.
Cool. Yeah. I can't wait to see them. I'm so excited to see the show as well.
Same. Yeah. Well, we're going to get into our final questions now. Heidi, thank you so much for this. This has just been fantastic.
Thank you.
You're welcome. The first question we ask every guest is, if you could do an art heist, you could steal any artwork in the world for yourself, what would it be and why?
I think I'm going to... I have like two options. I'm going to steal a Picabia painting. I heard from my friend there's a very like good Picabia show in Paris right now. And then I think I'm going to go steal one of his work there.
And you've been a fan of Francis Picabia for a while?
Yeah, I love Francis Picabia. Yeah. And he inspired me a lot with the transparent of figures and stuff. Yeah.
How did you discover his work? Was it when you were studying painting?
I think I saw a show when I was in LA when I was a student. I don't know, it was LACMA or SF MoMA or something. But it was a big Picabia show, and then I was shocked. I looked through the whole show, I was like, okay, this is a group show, and then there was one person. And then because there are so many of his work are doesn't look like it's from the same person. And I'm like, I want to paint like that. I want to paint, have a variety of different styles. Yeah.
That's very cool.
That's very exciting.
The other question we ask every guest is, what is your favorite color?
My favorite color right now is Crimson Lake. It's like I think it's my favorite red. Yeah.
And is that a certain brand that called it Crimson Lake, or is Crimson Lake an official color?
I thought it's an official color. It's mine is from Michael Harding, so yeah.
Very nice. And what is the best advice you've ever received so far when it comes to your art?
Best advice I received is to I have a advice that people keep telling me, but I keep like rebelling towards. People always say don't overpaint it, like don't overwork it, but I love overworking it. I feel like that's what makes magic happen, so yeah.
I think this is good because you're not listening to that and the paintings are brilliant. You're not listening to really clearly painting a window. You're not listening to these other things that people are telling you to do. You're really forging your own language, and I think it's incredibly exciting and something that you should continue to do and be very proud of.
Well, yeah, it's the best advice, isn't it? Is be yourself, because there's no one else like you. So all you can do is be yourself. I'm looking up Crimson Red. It's Crimson Lake. It's such an interesting colour. So it's like a really warm, rich, deep red. And it says it's almost heading to purple. How strange.
It's very transparent.
Oh, right.
Yeah, you can like paint it over like things and it'd be like something under red light. Yeah.
But this has been so amazing. Thank you so much, Heidi. This show opens on the 15th of March at Pippi Holdsworth Gallery. Which is on Heddon Street, off of Regent Street in the West End of London. It's titled 700 Nights of Winter, and there's not 700 paintings, but it feels like 700 nights, dark nights, have gone into this work.
Psychologically
so
intense.
There's a real kind of a vibrancy to this body of work, and we can't wait to see it. So thank you for coming on.
And thank you so much.
Are you on Instagram? You've got a really random Instagram name. It probably isn't random once you explain it, but to me, I feel like it's quite random. What is it?
Oh, it's what Lee Hady means. It's Plum Black Field.
Oh. There you go. That's why it's not random. Plum Black Field. So it's @plum_black_field.
Yeah.
That's the translation Brilliant. Of your name. How beautiful. Well, we've loved talking to you. I can't wait to meet you in person for the first time as well very soon. Hopefully I'll see you at your show. And congratulations. And we'll be back very soon. Thanks for listening. And thanks to
everyone
at Pippi's Gallery as well for helping. Lots of love.
Thanks,
bye.
Eddie.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Talk Art with Robert Diamond and Russell Tovey.
Follow us on Instagram @TalkArt, where you can view images of all artworks discussed in today's episode, with music by Jack Northover.
Subscribe to Talk Art at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Acast, or wherever it is that you get your podcasts.
Give us a rating and write us a comment. Thanks for listening.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.